Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, I've been telling you all week that we were going to be talking with an animal communicator, and her name is Danielle McKinnon, and she is back in Massachusetts. That's where she's located. And we're going to be talking about various things relative to animal communication. And for those of you who are regular listeners to the show, you know how much we do love working with animals, and I have two Scotties myself. But let's welcome Danielle to the show. Danielle, it's a delight having you here today.
I'm very excited to be here today, so thank you.
Well, I have an audience that really has a passion for animals, and this is something I think most people in general do. I think they really have a fondness for creatures of various types, whether it's birds or dogs, what have you. But Danielle, I became acquainted with you because of a book by John Holland called The Spirit Whisperer, and I'd like my audience to know a little bit about you. John Holland is well renowned as a trance medium. Now, how did you connect with John? How did your paths cross? And give us a little background on yourself.
Okay. I'll start with how I met John. John actually sought me out because he was looking for an animal communicator for his dog, Coda. Mm-hmm. So he called on me, and I went and met him. We did a session. And the funny thing about John was he was definitely skeptical during that session. Like, he didn't walk in going, I totally believe in this. He walked in saying, you prove it to me, and then I'll believe it. So It was, you've got John Holland in there, and you think, oh, he's gonna believe it all. He's going to be open to it all. But he made me work.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it was. It worked out well because he came out of that session feeling that he knew his dog better and really feeling that you could speak psychically or telepathically, whatever you're going to call it, with animals. And so it helped him in that sense, and it helped me because I met somebody I really liked.
Mm-hmm. Now, Danielle, animals are just phenomenal anyway, and I know they're telepathic, and I know they all have their own way of communicating. My husband and I have had Scottish Terriers for years. I've had unique experiences with cats and various birds. Tell us how you got involved with discovering your own particular talents and why you decided to make this your work.
Okay. Well, growing up, I was the odd child. You know, I was the kid who had the interest in all the animals and the insects and the birds and the guinea pigs and the rabbits. We had all of those animals plus dogs in our house. And I kind of stood out in that way because there weren't a lot of people. I lived in the Midwest, and there weren't a lot of people around me who felt the same way about animals. So my family kind of, you know, swept that under the rug, like, okay, let's minimize that a little. And what I didn't realize at the time was that my connection was so deep because it was also this telepathic connection. I was connecting in with the animals. I really did know what they were thinking and feeling and seeing and saying, even though the environment, the people around me, including my family, were like, what are you talking about? No, let's go over here and do some math or some jump rope. So I kind of closed that down for quite a while until later in life when my dog got sick. I was an adult, and a friend said, hey, why don't you take your dog to this pet psychic who's in town? And I was like, oh, my God, I'd always been interested, but I'd never thought that I kind of was skeptical myself. I was like, is this real? But I think it might be real. But I've never been in touch with anyone. So I brought my dog to see this animal communicator who did such a wonderful job. However, I have no idea what he said, because once he said the first thing that my dog was saying to him, which was, well, she's upset and she's sick because she's upset that you and your husband have been fighting about your mother. And it was that moment, it was that key phrase that I heard, and that was true, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It was that key phrase that I heard that made, within a few months, I had opened up my business as an animal communicator. I just needed some validation there that basically everything I'd thought my whole life was real, and he was able to give me that validation.
Now, let me ask you a question, because the chapter in this book, The Spirit Whisperer, which is chapter 12, John goes into a great deal of detail about Coda and how he has a real affinity for Westies and so on and so forth. But with you, when you were going through these experiences and you opened up and you started working with people's animals, what was the biggest obstacle that you felt that you had to overcome to be at ease with doing this?
You know, and my biggest obstacle is an obstacle that a lot of my clients now run into. It was feeling that it was okay to do it, despite the fact that there were most of the people around me were saying, what are you doing? I have my MBA. I went to grad school and got my MBA. I mean, I really went down a very corporate, mainstream track,
mm-hmm.
and I left that whole career to do this. So I had mm-hmm. to deal with a lot of people going, you left that income and you left that style of living to do this. And, I mean, my family was questioning it. Everybody was questioning it. Now, they don't question it anymore. Now I'm getting calls from my family in the middle of the night. Why is my dog sick? What's going on? What's he saying? But in the beginning, there was a lot of people were naysayers. They didn't
mm-hmm.
understand why I would give up the one life for this life.
In Native American cultures, in many cultures, people like to call them primitive, which I think is a ridiculous term, but they will say this, there have always been those individuals that have a harmonic with people. And I think of one of my favorite guests that I have on, Teresa Tapp. She has two Bichon Frises, and she just loves those little dogs, and she has a friend who is an animal communicator, and she says there's nothing more frustrating to her that she, as much as she loves these dogs, she can't talk to them. She said, it just irritates me no end. I have to go to somebody else. I'll find out what I want to know. Really
well, it
cute.
Is hard. It's hard to yeah. speak psychically or telepathically, whatever we're going to call it. It's hard to do it with your own animals.
Mm-hmm.
A lot
mm-hmm.
of times people don't trust the information that they're getting because they think they're thinking it rather than receiving the information. So that's very difficult for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. It is. And I think that it's important when we're talking about this for you to be able to share this, because there is that factor of detachment that when you can do it, then you become a better receiver as well as a sender, because we're both senders and receivers.
Yes.
And I think when you have a passion for animals, I am putting together myself a book, and my listeners know this, where I'm asking for stories about the paranormal from people, and I got one from a lady who had a communication with a fly, and I know some people listening to that are just going to crack up and say, oh, darn it, give me a break, you're not even getting a fly. Well, if you stop and think about it, she said it was a phenomenal experience, and she has had a number of experiences relative to animals, insects. And she said, and I know anybody else reading this would just laugh. I don't laugh because I know better. And I just think it's absolutely fascinating. Now, what is one of your favorite stories? I know you've got John Holland's story and the Spirit Whisperer that you share. But what is one of your favorite stories that you love to share with people about animal communication that really was significant to you? Do you have anything that pops into your head right off the top?
Yeah, what pops into my head right off the bat is actually a story. I call myself an animal intuitive rather than an animal communicator, because I feel that the phrase animal communication has become a little narrow. And it, to so many people, it just means, okay, I'm psychically speaking with this animal, and he's giving me this information, et cetera. But it's also, it's a state of mind. It's how you hold your energy. It's what you're open to, so that you can receive many more modes of information, like little data bits that come in from everywhere. So the story that comes to mind actually doesn't have to do with a client. It has to do with my son, who, he's 8. At the time, I think he was 4 or 5, and he's grown up around this. So for him, he's just open to the world of animals, the world of animals communicating their information in every way. So he's not afraid of any animals. I was upstairs in the house one day, and I hear him yelling, "Mom, Mom!" And this is a little 4-year-old kid, and I come downstairs, and he's standing in the kitchen holding a mouse in his hand. And the mouse is not afraid of him, and he is not afraid of the mouse. And he's just holding the mouse in his hand, not even holding the mouse. The mouse was sitting in his hand. And for him, there was just a connection between him and this mouse. The mouse had walked up and crawled into his hand, and then he stood up, hung out with the mouse for a little bit. They felt each other, and I was like, okay. I didn't expect it. And then he put the mouse down and let the mouse, okay, he let it go in the kitchen, but still.
That was a whoopee moment. Yes, the mouse running around in the kitchen. I think that was a mother's moment that you just go, okay, I know what I do. Hey, son, we've got to have a talk here.
But the coolest part about it was there was no fear, there was no ick. Mm-hmm. He just connected with this mouse, and you know how skittish mice are. But mouse came right up to him and walked into his hand. It was the coolest thing, and that's the state of mind that I teach people to be in. It's not all about, oh, I heard this animal say this in my head. You know, it's about that connection that forms when you have that openness to animals. And I feel like the people that you're talking about, even Teresa Tapp, who has the two, the ones who she can't speak with, she still has an amazing connection to those animals. It just doesn't look the way she was thinking it would be cool to look.
Now, I really like those points because I think that's so significant. It's not unlike, for those listening, and by the way, we're talking with Danielle McKinnon, who is an animal intuitive. She prefers that term rather than animal communicator. But it's not unlike when you walk into, let's say, a pet store or a rescue shelter, and you're looking for that pet that's going to be yours. And I'm very much of a mindset that if you're going to adopt an animal, there has to be that particular click, I call it, or bonding. And so I'm a great one. I'll just sit on the floor. I don't say anything. I don't do anything. And it's amazing to me how an animal will psych you out and go, "You're mine. That's
yes.
it." And all of the rest of the animals will go away. And this has happened to us more than once. And my little Scotty Victor, he is so intelligent. He had me psyched out within 3 seconds. He knew exactly what to do because I really wasn't in the mindset of getting a dog. And he had me psyched out, so he went over and gave my husband a bunch of Slurpees. And my husband said, "Oh, we got to take him home." And I said, "Oh, for heaven's sakes, we cannot take this dog home." But I knew he was going to be our dog. And he ended up being my dog. He had figured me out. He came into the room, and he said, "I'm going to go home with him. But I know she doesn't really want to have a dog at this time, so I'm going to work on the old man." This is my script. And so he did. My husband fell head over heels in love with him with about, a split second. And I said, "Oh no," because this dog had more energy than I don't know what. Anyway, he is just a love. He's the sweetest animal, but he is my dog. And he figured me out that fast. He knew.
And that's, I actually talk about that quite a bit, about how the animals choose us, and how they choose us because they know that specific animal, your dog knows that he can help you in this lifetime. And
it's
there's
amazing.
A connection there.
Yes, and there are so many experiences I've had with animals through the years, whether it's been birds or it's been little bit with horses and dogs and, cats. There is this intelligence that's just phenomenal. But it's that zone. What my point was going to be is it's that awareness that the animal will find you. And I was just reading a story the other day where somebody had a dog that showed up on their front porch and just sat there, and they opened the door and they said, "Who are you?" The dog just sat there. It's like, "I'm here. I'm yours." you're going to be. And this person that had no intention of having a dog, this dog didn't belong to anybody. They said, "How in the world it chose my house? I have not a clue." And it ended up becoming a phenomenal companion to them. And cats do this all the time. Dogs are a little bit different in the way that they'll approach things, but it's really quite amazing, I think. It's quite amazing. Let's give my audience some tips, Danielle. And in the book, The Spirit Whisperer, you have some very good tips that you gave John Holland relative to learning how to communicate with animals. And
I did.
Of course, John is a medium himself, so this is something I'm sure that he was delighted to put in the book.
Yes, he was really excited. I was excited. He was excited, too. He just gets excited for everything that he does.
Mm-hmm. And one of the points is, if you want to communicate with your pet, always ask permission first. Don't forget to thank the animal at the end of the session. Now, asking permission first. Mm-hmm. Tell us why that's so important.
A lot of us, as humans, we get so excited at the prospect of being able to communicate in this way with an animal that, as humans, we run in and we think it's going to be, the animal's maybe going to be just as excited as we are and think it's just as cool as we do. But animals communicate in this way through energy all the time. So a lot of times we humans, we kind of barrel over the animals in our enthusiasm to communicate, not realizing that this animal really does have a choice. Just like any person you talk to, they choose whether or not they're going to speak with us. It's the same with the animals. And the animal may not be in the mood to speak, or it may not be appropriate. Sometimes an animal will say no because you really don't have the right to be speaking to this animal about this issue. Maybe it's a private issue between the animal and the animal's owner, and you're not involved in that. So permission is really, really important. Permission also puts into place a respect. It shows that you have a respect for the animal, and when the animals feel that respect coming from you, you have the opportunity to have a deeper connection. And when you have the deeper connection, that's when you start getting the really cool information exchange about the bigger emotions, rather than, "Hey, his favorite toy is this," but more like, "Hey, I'm here to help so-and-so do this with her life, and we're working on this together," and that soul level stuff. So it all starts with permission.
You also say when you're wanting to communicate with an animal, you need to ask very short questions. And now this is, would you say do this verbally? Would you say do it just mentally? Or does it make any difference?
It doesn't make a difference to the animal, but it does make a difference to the human. Some humans will feel like a total goofball talking out loud to the animal. And so they just don't feel comfortable. And if that human doesn't feel comfortable, then they're not going to be in the right energetic state to be able to really communicate and connect with the animal. So it's important that you not only make sure that the animal's comfortable, but that you make sure that however you're doing this feels good to you as well. And the short questions are because we as humans, again, we get all excited. Okay, well, why are you doing this? And then you do that. And the animal, it's overwhelming. It's our excitement energy. It's our human energy that can be so big, kind of overpowering that animal energy, which is a lot of times more whole than our energy. Because humans, where humans and animals are concerned, we humans get activated. We get emotional. We get triggered. We get upset. We get filled with love. We get filled with excitement. So take all that and bring that into a communication. It becomes very important to speak in short sentences with the animal so that it's controlling your own energy, not necessarily because the animal can't handle it.
Now,
does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
But you also say that animals think in pictures, and some people are not very visual. Some people, I think, have a challenge putting pictures together in their mind. You know, that this might be a real intellectual exercise for some people. And it's not a put down. It's just that we're all different in our comfort zones with communication. you give an example saying if you are going to be gone, if you image a clock and let the animals know mentally that you're going to be back in a certain amount of time, that's good. But I found that animals usually will figure that out.
Absolutely. The visualizing the clock, it's actually a comfort for the human. That so the human can feel, hey, I really got this message through. I put the image of the clock there. I'm comfortable now that I got this message through. It's kind of hammering the point home. The animals can actually sense before you come home, as you're coming home, they know. They're so connected to our energies. And you know, probably everybody's seen those, like, Discovery Channel things where they do tests on the animal, the dog in the house. And they keep the person away from the house for a certain amount of time. And then at a random time, they have the person start to come home, and the dog jumps off the couch and goes and waits by the door without being physically connected to the person. So they definitely know, but a lot of the human-animal relationship is actually about getting that human to feel comfortable with the communication and with what's going on, because the more comfortable that human is, the more comfortable that animal is going to be.
You also say when you're trying to connect with your animal, like if you're concerned about an issue of wellness, This is something that I think for many people would be very, very significant. Tell us how we can, if we have this feeling something's wrong, how we can connect with that animal to see what we need to do and what we don't need to do.
I'm sorry, so I don't understand the question.
Well, how do we use our bodies?
Oh, okay.
You know, as a guide. Because if you have an animal, and let's say you have a feeling, you know, I think my cat isn't feeling well. I can't put my finger on it. Something's wrong. How can you get a reading on that animal?
A very simple way to get a reading on that animal is to actually, you could do it out loud or in your head, ask the animal to show you how he's feeling or she is feeling in your own body. And I do this every time I connect with an animal, because it's actually, I've found that animals love to show me how, most of them love to show me how they're feeling. It's kind of like a chance to go, oh, my back aches, and this is going on, and that's going on. So what happens is I'll say, show me how you're feeling, show me how you're feeling in my body, and I'll get a little twinge in my hip, or my tummy will feel upset, or I'll feel a little sweaty, and I'll know, okay, this is coming from them. Now, you don't have to be this super psychic person to get that. Animals are really good at sending this information. This is what they do every day. This is how they talk to each other every day. So you've got this extra powerful information coming to you. You just have to be open to it. And then they can, like, if your wrist is feeling sketchy or in pain, you know, you can really correlate that with the wrist of the dog or the cat or whatever type of animal we're dealing with. Your body will, I mean, it's not an exact match because their body's clearly built a bit differently from ours, but it's pretty close.
You also talk about how you're not going to get long intellectual sentences with animals.
Oh, this is my favorite.
This is something that I think we humans feel. We're so busy being busy with our mouths that we can yaddle for hours at a time. You know, I just know some people, I could be on the phone with them for 16 hours a day and we still would have something to talk about.
Yeah.
Animals aren't that way.
No. The coolest thing about animals is that they are capable of caring about all the things that we care about. It's not that they don't get it. It's not that the concepts that we're dealing with, like, oh, how do I pay the mortgage or, you know, all these things, it's not that those concepts are too difficult for animals to understand. It's just that they get the big picture. So they're not going to waste time talking about all these things and connecting with you and all these various things because they get it. No, they're going to get right to the essence of it. So when they communicate, they're going to give you the essence of the communication. If you're communicating with an animal and you're having this long diatribe of information that you feel is coming from this animal, it's probably time to look at what you're doing, because they really send the information in spurts. They know that we as humans handle it better that way. I've worked with a few people in classes when I teach beginner animal communication classes who start getting, well, you know, he used to live with the farmer that had the pitchfork, and, you know, this one woman, she was getting these long, long diatribes, and everybody else was getting hay or street. Mm-hmm. You know, they were getting one-word answers, images, of feelings, but this one woman was getting all this stuff. Now, she, as it turned out, as she learned, was layering it in. So when I told her she wasn't allowed to write any stories, suddenly the information started pouring in a different way, and it was all very accurate. But she had to remove her desire to have these long conversations with animals, thinking that that meant she was doing a better job.
Interesting. Now, you have a point, and again, The Spirit Whisperer is the name of the book, and Danielle McKinnon, John Holland is the primary author of this book, but he brings up Danielle because of his interaction with her. The animals will tune into our thoughts and our emotions very quickly. It's very hard. If you're upset, they know it. If you're angry, anything. I mean, your animals, if they've really bonded with you, they've got everything down to the nth degree. They've figured it out. They know if you're going to get distracted, it's just like, oh, ho-hum, here they go again. You know, this is the way they are. It's an amazing association we have with animals. But you say distance doesn't matter when it comes to communicating with animals. So if you're a business person and you're traveling, you can communicate with your animals, and they do get it. Telepathy works.
It does work. And actually, I found that a lot of people who learn to communicate with their animals psychically then get a little confused. They start doing it at a distance, and they get a little confused when they come in to do it with their animal in person, because there's their animal nibbling at their bum and scratching and looking over at the squirrel and tweeting over here. So, you know, the physical body of the animal doesn't necessarily look like it's listening, but the essence, the energy of the animal is listening. So this is all through energy. Distance doesn't matter, and close proximity sometimes throws off beginning communicators.
It can.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the points that you bring out that I really think is significant is that animals enjoy being animals.
Yeah.
And that they need to be accepted as such. And it's really tough, because there are some people that want to make them into much more than what they really are in their true spectrum. And have you ever had somebody that really went to an extreme with an animal and you had to teach them this?
I have that all the time, actually.
There
are a lot of people. Yeah, I run into a lot of my clients. They come in and they say, this is my baby, and he gets to sit at the table, and, you know, really treating the dog, for example. It happens a lot more with dogs than cats. So I'll stick to dogs for a moment, but he gets to sit at the table, and he sleeps with me, and he tells me when he wants this and when he wants that, where the relationship is very much out of balance, and usually I get to use the words of the animal to help bring things back in balance. Those the animals, whatever type of animal it is, it's most comfortable in its natural environment. They don't desire to be human. We may like being human, but to a dog, a cat, a bird, they don't want to be human. They want to be a dog, a cat, and a bird. So all that we can do to facilitate that makes them more comfortable, and then you end up with well-adjusted animals as well as well-adjusted people who can live in harmony. Yeah, there's some change that has to go on, because we do have to adapt these animals to live in our human environment, but they have no desire to be humans. And I have had many people who come in and don't realize that they're not doing their animal a service. They're doing their animal a disservice by treating their animal like a little human. But the cool thing is, those people who come to me and who are doing this, they're already open to change just because of the fact that they came to me for information and for assistance. So most of the time, those people have been able to change a few things in the relationship, and the balance comes back, and both sides start feeling better.
Well, as you can tell, Danielle has a passion for what she does, and it's been a delight having you as a guest. You have a website, Danielle McKinnon. That's DanielleMackinnon.com. And you'll be able to go there and find out more about Danielle and her services and other such information as you might be curious about. Danielle, it's been a delight having you as a guest today.
Thank you. I've loved being on your show. Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. Don't forget, check out her website, DanielleMackinnon.com, and the chapter about her and her skills is in the book, The Spirit Whisperer, Chronicles of a Medium, and the medium is John Holland. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone lines are now open. Telephone number to call into is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, remember, I'm putting together a book collecting 100 stories. I'd love to have yours if you've had a unique paranormal experience. We just got through talking with Danielle, talking about experiences with animals. Have you had particular paranormal experiences with animals? Send me an email. I'd love to have your story. And also be sure you put your contact information in there. Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, International.com. And if you wanted to send it to me via snail mail, you could do that too. You send it to the Donna Sebo Show, and that's P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. I think stories of animals are absolutely amazing, but one of the things I wanted to share with you was this delightful poem. It's called The Rainbow Bridge. And for any of you who have dealt with the death of a pet, I think that this is very, very significant. I know we've had a number of animals that have passed over the Rainbow Bridge, and this is just such a charming, charming poem because it was inspired by a Norse legend, and apparently it was put together by Stephen Diane Borofsky in 1998, and you can go to their website, newrainbowbridge.com, and you can get a copy of this. This is how it reads. By the edge of a woods at the foot of a hill is a lush green meadow where time stands still, where the friends of man and woman do run when their time on earth is over and done. For here, between this world and the next, is a place where each beloved creature finds rest. On this golden land they wait and they play till the rainbow bridge they cross over one day. No more do they suffer in pain or in sadness, for here they are whole, their lives filled with gladness. Their limbs are restored, their health renewed, their bodies have healed with strength imbued. They romp through the grass without even a care until one day they start and sniff at the air. All ears prick forward, eyes dart front and back. Then all of a sudden, one breaks from the pack. For just at that instant, their eyes have met, together again, both person and pet. So they run to each other, these friends, from long past the time of their parting is over at last. The sadness they felt when they were apart has turned into joy once more in each heart. They embrace with a love that will last forever, and then side by side, they cross over together. That's the Rainbow Bridge. And I just think it's a charming, charming poem. I really, really enjoy it. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat with me, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Wally Amos is a man that I have a great deal of appreciation for, and I just think the man has just given so much in life. And, of course, almost everybody knows about the famous Amos cookies and how Wally ended up losing his name because of various things with the cookie company. Well, the man has since come back. He's got some adorable dolls he's developed for children, but he's developed food products. He's a very productive, mature individual. And he has a wonderful attitude about life that I think is just wonderful. And I wanted to share with you something that he made a comment about, because he's had his share of rough times. I've never known a successful person that hasn't. We all have those stinking thinking moments and the stinking times that come in and out of our lives, and that's part of how we grow as individuals. He said that he, like other people, have made comments, I'm going through a rough patch. I'm going through, he feels, are four key words. I am going through. He said he likes to tell people when he hears those words to keep on going through whatever you're dealing with. And he had a friend, J.T. O'Hara, that had a knack about saying something similar. He said to Wally, when you're going through hell, don't stop to take pictures. And I just love that. I think that's so great. When you're going through hell, don't stop to take pictures. He said, in today's world, in the world of high tech, we have so many ways to take pictures and constantly share them with everybody we meet. We'll wallow in our troubles. And we'll talk and talk and talk and talk about how bad everything is. And he said, things haven't changed very much, because usually when you are doing that, if you're in the company of other people who are miserable, by the time you get through with your conversation, you're going to be in such abject misery, you won't even be able to see your way out. So he said, we really need to take a moment to think about how bad is our life, really? He had an oldest son, Michael, who called him at one time. He said, I was involved, Dad, with the New York Marathon, and it has given me a whole new perspective. He was in this marathon observing someone who had no legs and only had one arm, and this marathon participant was navigating a wheelchair very slowly, but he was still in the marathon. And his son, Michael, was so impressed with this because this individual was participating. He wasn't going fast, obviously, but he was participating because he was taking on a challenge for himself. He wasn't trying to prove anything to anybody. He was doing this for himself. And Wally said, then he got a call one time from a woman who was stuck competing for two contracts without any guarantee of getting either one of the contracts. And she decided she was going to separate herself from the negativity that was going on and all of the negotiations that were happening and just would leave this very depressive feeling that she found herself immersed in and decided to visit a community called Ruiru. It's in an area near Nairobi, Kenya. And she went there to take a break. She got away from all of this negotiating stuff that was very oppressive to her. Now, when she finished visiting this area outside of Nairobi, Kenya, she came back to her job and got involved in what she considered the rat race of her working environment. And she said, instead of my complaining, I decided I had to make a decision about what I wanted to do with my life and what was going to make me happy and contented. She ended up returning to Kenya to work with the children she had become so fond of. She said she had to go through all of this stuff to really find out who she was and what really fulfilled her as a person. She had to decide between suffering or freedom. And I liked this because I think Wally, when he wrote this article, really put this article into a very, very clear, succinct message. And I like the two words, suffering or freedom. Lots of times we end up getting kicks in the pants in one way or another. It can be financially, it can be emotionally, it can be physically in some way, it can be mentally. But those kicks are there sometimes to help us wake up out of our own sleep. We might have put ourselves into what we call a dream land special. And we've just sort of become hypnotized by this dreamland, and we realize that we have to get out of it. We don't want to stay in it. I remember talking to a woman once that had been horribly, horribly abused. She was so badly abused. She'd been sent to the hospital 22 times. Now think of that, being beaten up so badly, going to the hospital 22 times. Now the woman that was sitting in front of me was extremely attractive, intelligent, articulate, and my eyes must have gotten as big as saucers. I said, 22 times? I can't believe it. You're so intelligent. Why would you have gone through it? She said it was on the 22nd time she was sitting on a hospital bed, and she happened to look up, and there was a mirror nearby, and she looked at herself in the mirror, and she said, why are you doing this to yourself? She said, I came out of my mental stupor. She chose freedom. She's never experienced that again. Suffering or freedom? We all have a choice. Remember, when you put yourself in the company of people, misery does love company, and you find yourself blah, blah, blahing how bad everything is, da, 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 stop yourself and say, wait a minute, where am I putting my mind? Where am I putting my words? Where am I putting my feelings? Do I want to stay in this, or do I want to say, shift, disconnect, I'm going to go to another location, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. We have the right to do that. That is what you as an individual do have control over. And, you know, when you're in a conversation with people and that's all they can do is moan and groan and you know, just make all of these comments, say, excuse me, but have you ever looked at it another way? And you'll find that probably if they are enjoying their misery tremendously, they may decide they don't need your company. But that's okay. You're not going to lose out. You don't need to go through that kind of stuff. You need to get rid of what Wally said are those cameras. Stop taking pictures that you don't need. Like his friend said, when you're going through hell, don't put it on automatic picture taking. You just don't do that. Choose peace of mind and freedom. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. That's a toll-free number if you'd like to call in. And would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, which I would be delighted to do. So give me a buzz. 888-815-9756. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95, plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz. 888-815-9756. I came across some fun information that I thought I'd share with you. If you're going through a lot of stress and you are having an extremely difficult time, well, there is something that may really assist you. It's called the zombie walk. Ah, it's for real. If you'd like to walk with the dead, would enjoy hearing the moans of animated corpses to conversations with mortals, well, you can join or organize a zombie walk. I mean, hey, if nothing else is working, what have you got to lose? A zombie walk or a zombie march is an organized public gathering of two or more people who dress as zombies and wander around, limping their way in an organized route to a public center or cemetery. Wow. I guess you'd really have to be in a state of mind if you had a lot of stress. This might work for you if nothing else is doing it. I just thought that was a hoot. Anyhow, I wanted to share that with you. Also, I wanted to share a story with you today about the machine of DeMarly. Engineering, my goodness, we are seeing such phenomenal things in our world today. But I thought I would share with you that good engineers have been around. Of course, we all know about the tombs in Egypt. They still haven't figured out who got all of that together. And that's always a topic of discussion because people that think they know keep on talking like they think they know. And then somebody comes up with something else and they go, well, this doesn't compute. So we may never know all of the exact details about that. But I can tell you about Versailles. This is a fascinating story because I am just amazed at what people centuries ago were able to do. Even with the Greeks and the Romans, did you know that the Romans had flushing toilets long before we ever had them in the Western world? That's right. The Romans had architectural designs and engineering concepts that were just amazing. And they're still researching and finding out things that the engineers of Rome did. And there's a lot of things that go even further back than that. So there was a lack of a water supply in Versailles when it was built. And, of course, Versailles is this phenomenal, phenomenal palatial environment that has fountains like you wouldn't believe. And you can go into St. Petersburg, and there is a summer garden palace that was built by Peter the Great, I believe. And what they have there is an exact replica of Versailles. So they implemented the very same mechanics that were used there very successfully. Well, Louis the 14th, when Versailles was being built, demanded 1,400 fountains. That's a little bit rough to wrap your mind about for one location. And this garden was going to be absolutely spectacular. And, of course, the volume of water that he needed for these 1,400 fountains rivaled the amount needed by the whole city of Paris at that time. Now, whenever the king walked in the grounds of Versailles, servants would operate the control so that the fountains were flowing freely with water. And, of course, the fountains were spectacular. Now, if Louis the 14th walked around and any of those fountains didn't work, the overseer of the fountains got fined. Interesting arrangement. They didn't have any unions then. Now, King Louis searched for an adequate supply of water, and there was all kinds of people that came to him with various designs, concepts, and ideas. And the best known that finally was employed in the Versailles environment was called the Machine de Marly. Now, it started, the machine was begun in 1681. They started on it then. And its purpose was to raise a constant supply of water from the Seine River. Now, 14 enormous water wheels, each of them were 36 feet wide, moved 221 pumps to bring water 177 yards up the hillsides from the river. When it was finished in 1684, it took them 3 years to build this, a job began on an aqueduct to carry the water to two reservoirs near Versailles. There was a drawback, though. The machine suffered a lot of breakdowns and was under constant repair. But the fact that it did the job was an amazing thing in the 1600s. Just think of it. Usually everything had to be built out of wood. They didn't have a whole bunch of metal tooling that they did. And the picture that I've got in front of me is absolutely amazing, the way that it was drawn out. It's just an incredible accomplishment, but that was back in the 1600s. So there's just all kinds of things that have been done in the past that were successful in part, not successful in other ways, and look at where we are today. We stand on the shoulders of the people that have gone before us, no doubt about it. By the way, I wanted to bring up a couple of points. Oh, don't forget, tomorrow we're going to have music. We're going to have the Figurados tomorrow, and we're going to be talking about the music. They are really good lyricists. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about gypsy magic. Raymond Buckland is going to be our guest. But the Figurados, they are sort of country-style music, but their lyrics are really, really very special. And they have some songs that they put together where the lyrics tell particular stories. And I think you'll enjoy it. So we're going to be talking with the Figurados tomorrow live, and I look forward to having them as a guest. So I invite you to join me, and then, of course, don't forget, we got the gypsy goodies that we're going to be talking about on Friday. So much fascinating history relative to gypsies. Now, if you have a home office, or if you've got, let's say, computers and a printer, and you've got all kinds of stuff in your home, you need to remember that on your insurance policy, if you have a homeowner's insurance policy, you need to be sure to add coverage for your computers, because if there's any damage to them, that coverage will replace what, including laptops, believe it or not. You will be able to get that coverage. Now, you do, if you have a loss, you need to have your sales receipts, you have to have appraisals, you have to have all kinds of things in your property inventory. But if you itemize it out in a way, and your insurance agent will be able to help you with this, then you're going to be covered. In today's world, so many people are doing work in their own homes. They don't often think about adding this kind of coverage to their policy. there may be a little bit of coverage under the basic policy structure, but depending on the age of your computer or the sophistication of software, what you've got going, you know, if you have an earthquake and something falls or maybe flood insurance, look at the poor people in Tennessee, what they've gone through. They didn't have adequate insurance coverage. They're going to be hard-pressed to be able to replace those things that are in their home. Just wanted to share that with you quickly. We've run out of time. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Enjoy this day. Count your blessings and understand you can control how you think and how you respond to things. That's a great feeling. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back here, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Hi, this is Marco May, and you're listening to the number one internet radio network on the planet, bbsradio.com.